24. Port Ferry, South Carolina, September 4, 1780, 5 a.m. The swamp fox is being hunted. It is a little before dawn when Colonel Francis Marion orders his 52-man fighting force to break camp. Word reached him just yesterday that a column of Loyalist militia is approaching. Colonel Marion normally prefers the surprise of an ambush, but this morning he feels the need to press the attack. Thus, his soldiers ride through the black gum trees and scrub oaks of this sandhill region along the Peedy River. They are farmers, Huguenots, teenagers, all mostly dressed in rags. To distinguish them from the enemy, Marion has ordered that each man wear a white feather in his cap. Marion himself wears a scarlet vest and a form-fitting leather cap inscribed with the words, "Liberty or Death." But now liberty seems a lost cause. The war in South Carolina is going badly. The land between the main cities has become a dangerous place of marauding mercenaries and militias. August has been particularly sticky and hot, and also a time of acute embarrassment for the Continental Army as the British continue to tighten their stranglehold on the region. 2 weeks ago, the rebels suffered another stunning setback in the South when a force commanded by General Horatio Gates, the self-styled hero of Saratoga, was routed by British soldiers under Lieutenant General Charles Cornwallis. Gates fled the battlefield at Camden, leaving behind 900 killed and wounded. Another 1,000 men were taken prisoner. None other than Colonel Bannister Tarleton and his British Legion led the final, crucial cavalry charge. By nightfall, General Gates had run so fast that he was 60 miles north in Charlotte. His reputation would never recover from this act of cowardice. Footnote: Gates's military career effectively ended after the slaughter at Camden. He made a number of grave errors during the battle, including placing green recruits against the British Army's toughest infantry and feeding his soldiers a diet heavy in molasses beforehand, causing many to suffer from severe intestinal distress, which limited their ability to fight effectively. The loss of troops, artillery, and the entire baggage train, coupled with Gates's inexplicable decision to retreat almost 200 miles on horseback, left him in utter disgrace. Congress convened a court-martial, though the general's few remaining supporters ended the inquiry. After that, in 1782, he was asked to join General Washington's staff, but he was never allowed to command men in battle. General Horatio Gates died in Manhattan in 1806. Like many figures of the Revolutionary War, he is buried at Trinity Church in Manhattan. However, the exact location of his grave has been lost to history. End footnote. Most rebels didn't have the option of taking flight. As an example to any American who would defy the crown, Lieutenant General Cornwallis made a public show of hanging a dozen prisoners. This vengeful behavior has now become the norm in the increasingly lawless Carolinas, where the British and their loyalist allies routinely burn farms and homes, kill a man rather than let him surrender, and encourage religious feuds among Baptists, Presbyterians, French Protestant Huguenots, and Anglicans. The British success is based largely upon an aggressive campaign. Tarleton's dragoons, the main strike force, most recently defeated a band of 800 Continental soldiers led by South Carolina's own Colonel Thomas Sumter. Like Gates, the Carolina gamecock Sumter was forced to run for his life and is currently still in hiding. In the whole American South, there is now just one senior Continental Army officer left to press the fight against the British. That man is Colonel Francis Marion. Born in 1732, the same year as George Washington, the South Carolinian is a roughneck and an independent man who owns a plantation and does not want to live under British rule. At 5'2" and weighing only 110 pounds, Marion is a thin, knock-kneed 48-year-old with a hooked nose, a receding hairline that rides well past his forehead, and a prominent limp, thanks to an ankle broken after jumping out a second-story window during a drinking party. Unmarried and childless, He speaks in the fractured syntax of the Carolina Lowcountry and is known for being hard on his 20 slaves. The British are now targeting Marion's plantation and are soon to seize his home and human chattel. Marion draws on an array of skills for revenge. He possesses a thorough knowledge of the local swamps, knows how to live off the land, and demonstrates superior horsemanship. He is also an expert at guerrilla military tactics due to his experience repelling frontier raids by bands of Cherokee. Marion and his men attack by night and retreat deep into the swamps to sleep by day. They change camps on a daily basis and post patrols at all times to warn allies of the approaching enemy. News of Marion's success has already spread through America, published in newspapers, and celebrated in Congress. "Colonel Marion," reads one report spelling his name wrong, "has surprised a party of enemy near Santee River, escorting 150 prisoners of the Maryland Division. He took the party and released the prisoners." Footnote. The words come from a letter written by General Horatio Gates to Congress on September 9, 1780. Despite his hasty retreat from Camden, Gates is still in command of the Continental Army's Southern Division. The words were read aloud in Congress on September 20, 1780. End footnote. There is no more wanted man in the state of South Carolina than Francis Marion. He and his volunteers are being hunted in every swamp and tributary up and down the coast. Further endangering Marion, the fall of Charleston has turned South Carolina into a haven for loyalists. Fearing British reprisals, throngs of citizens eagerly swear an oath of allegiance to King George. Men throughout the backcountry and lowcountry rush to join loyalist militias, isolating Marion and his men in the swamps. "I have given orders that all of the inhabitants of this province who have subscribed and have taken part in this revolt should be punished with the greatest rigor," Cornwallis says by way of proclamation. "I have ordered in the most positive manner that every militiaman shall be immediately hanged." On September 4th, Colonel Marion sends a small advance unit of horsemen ahead to scout. The rebel band has now been riding for 2 hours, and the sun is turning the day uncomfortably warm and humid. Meanwhile, the Loyalist force, under Major Micaiah Gainey, approaches from the opposite direction. Gainey is not yet 30, and the owner of a plantation in nearby Catfish Creek. The Tory militia he commands is local, raised from among the farmers and laborers living near his home. He now rides forth in search of Marion, knowing that a victory would surely make him a local hero among the Loyalist population. Traveling a few miles behind Gainey's force of 45 men is another militia of 200 men. The two forces combined outnumber Marion and his rebels 5-1. Major Gainey is confident of victory. Just before 8 a.m., Colonel Marion's advance unit comes face-to-face with Major Gainey's scouts. To the surprise of the rebels, the Tory cavalry does not fight. Instead, they turn and gallop away, terrified. Major John James, leading Marion's advance guard, orders a charge. "Come on, my boys! Come on! Here they are!" he yells, seeing that the Tories are regrouping after a short gallop. It is a clever ruse on James's part, for he is now so far out in front of his riders that he is actually alone. Still, it works. The Tories mount up once again and flee. In the fighting that occurs, 15 escape, including Major Gainey. The other 30 do not, many of them killed. Francis Marion quickly interrogates the new prisoners. Not only do the captives offer up the information he requires, but many also ask to join his militia, which Marion allows, though keeping the newcomers under close watch. The colonel soon learns that an enemy force of 200 men is 3 miles away and waiting for him. Among their numbers are members of the British 63rd Regiment, which also fought in Charleston and Camden. The news confirms that it is the regular army hunting Marion and not just the local militia. This time, Marion does not attack. Instead, he orders his men to retreat into the thick pine and scrub of a swampy region known as Blue Savannah. There they wait in the heat, harassed by flies and mosquitoes. Taking cover in the trees, they conceal themselves among the shrubs and await the fight. Marion did not merely order them to retreat, but also instructed them to race away from the battlefield as if in fear, hoping the enemy would think the day was won. Marion has set his trap. It is a huge gamble, for defeat by the superior British force would not only slaughter this small guerrilla band, but would also spell the end of hope for many in South Carolina who still believe that independence and democracy can prevail over the might of the world's greatest monarchy. Soon, the British infantry, under the command of Captain Jesse Barfield, marches into Blue Savannah, its men not knowing they are walking into a death trap. Suddenly, Colonel Marion's rebels gallop through the British ranks, wielding makeshift swords made from saw blades and shooting down redcoat and loyalist alike. The British break and run, taking shelter in the swamps adjacent to the PD River, cowering in the thick grass and dark waters. One British soldier is bitten fatally by a snake. The remaining men wait until the safety of nightfall to wade back onto dry land, relieved to find that Colonel Marion and his men have called off the search for them. Two Americans are wounded, and two horses shot dead. Otherwise, there have been no casualties among Francis Marion's nimble force. The British are not so lucky. At least 30 are dead, and many more wounded. Colonel Marion and his men not only have won the day, but have also captured more than 60 Loyalists. Marion shows respect for his prisoners, knowing that at war's end they will once again be his neighbors and countrymen. He also displays restraint by allowing the remaining British to hide in the little PD swamp rather than hunting them down. For this reason, 5 dozen Loyalists switch allegiance, requesting that they be allowed to join Francis Marion's guerrilla band. In this way, the insurrection gains ground. And as summer turns to fall, Francis Marion and his ever-growing army will continue to evade the British, slipping in and out of the swamps as silent as ghosts. For example, Marion orders that his men place blankets over wooden bridges before crossing them, all the better to quiet the heavy sound of horse hooves. Wherever he goes, Francis Marion's focus is on disrupting British communications and supplies, leaving the enemy to think he can strike anytime, anywhere. Marion develops a reputation for being daring and bold when, in fact, he is cautious. He takes few risks and plans his forays well in advance. He rarely overwhelms an opponent, instead drawing the enemy into an ambush. When the battles are over, Marion's men often return home to their farms and families and worship publicly in their local churches. In response to Marion's battlefield success, the British burn plantations and crops. They mistakenly believe that these terror tactics will beat down the rebels. Instead, they have the opposite effect, swinging popular support away from the king's men and toward the rebellion. By October 7th, just 1 month after the Battle of Blue Savannah, Lieutenant General Cornwallis abandons his plans to invade North Carolina. This is a serious blow to the British Army's southern strategy, but one forced by Marion's growing control over the backcountry of South Carolina. His dominance is reinforced that same day when 1,000 Americans defeat a large Loyalist force at a place called King's Mountain. The fighting is horrifying as vengeance sweeps through the rebel militias. Loyalist soldiers are shot dead as they try to surrender. Rather than leave the Loyalist commander, a Scottish officer from the British Regular Army, on the field after he is killed, the Americans allow his excited horse to drag the body through the battlefield and then strip the corpse naked. Even after the fighting is over, the Americans show no mercy, hanging 9 Loyalists for treason. Just one man can be considered Marion's equal in the art of brutal hit-and-run warfare. It is inevitable that Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton will soon meet Colonel Francis Marion on the field of battle. South Carolina has become the hotbed of the Revolutionary War, a place where more battles are fought than in any other state. And it will be Tarleton who will coin the nickname that will follow Francis Marion throughout history. The name is born out of frustration. Swamp Fox.